The Survivor Specialists, Phil, Will, and Blake are back, and today we are conducting, for the first time in a very long time, a Survivor winner ranking. Will, I think this might have been one of our first, like, five or six videos we did way back in the day. We didn't do it again because we think ranking winners is super arbitrary and random, and it makes no sense. But we just had 50 seasons of Survivor, so we really don't have a choice but to rank these players. Today, we're going to be ranking 50 to 41, also known as the 10 worst winners in Survivor history. This ranking is from myself, from Will, from Blake, and John and McKenna made a Survivor Rewind list that was their combined thoughts. And so they have their own 1 to 50 that's in here as well, trying to level us out. Will is like shuffling something. My goodness, that was crazy. Well, I don't know if it's coming through your microphone based on how loud that is. But yeah, no, that is, we are going to lose every single audio only listener. Okay. Like, I truly don't think you understand how insanely loud that is. I don't think that was coming through your mic.
What else could it come through?
Well, now maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe it's coming through your computer mic. That was just so insane when you were all the way off to the side how loud it was. So anyway, winner rankings. We're here. Will, Blake, myself. We can defend our takes. John and McKenna cannot. They're just here kind of as the one that we can just argue with the wall. How was this for everybody, ranking 50 winners? Tonight we're only doing 10. How was this for everybody? Nice. That's good. Okay.
I thought Will was going to go first. No,
I was about to go, and then I saw Blake's face, and then Blake was about to go, so I stopped.
Which is not something that we're wanting to think about. It's rough. I will say ranking the winners is extremely rough because it's something where you're like, this seems easy, but it feels like you're picking between 50 children. Then there's something where it's like, I'm going to take a hard stance. And maybe that'll help me out. And it's going to make me very unpopular very soon. And then I think it will be like, this one is okay here. And it's going to be so hypocritical. It's going to be like, why did you like this one person from 11 through 15, but not this person who does the same thing from 37 to 42? And I'm going to go, I don't know. And I have no actual reason, but that's just how I feel. So I think there will be a lot of personal stuff. There will be some, oh, are you sure about that? I think there will be a boo in some of your corners. But I think for the first 10, we may, this should be the 10 that make the most sense until we get to the final 10. I'm worried about the three episodes in between, though.
Blake, this is for you, buddy. Great. I'll do it every time you need it. You just tell me when you need it, and I got it ready to go. I don't feel like there's going to be any surprises tonight. I don't. Maybe one or two for some of you who overrate some people, but I don't think there's any surprises here for really anybody. Will, how was this for you? And please try to sound as intelligent as possible explaining what you're about to explain. Come on, buddy.
Why? Do you not have confidence that I can sound intelligent?
I don't know, man. When you were explaining how you were going to go through this, I've been waiting for this moment for a long time. So I'm ready, Will. Go ahead. Explain to everybody how this went for you.
Well, I tried to take a different approach because if we are agreeing that ranking winners is super hard because they all did what they're supposed to do. The goal of Survivor is to make it to either final two or final three and get more jury votes than the people at final two or final three with you. All of them achieved that goal. And if you're then asking, okay, did they do that? Check mark. Yes. Okay. Now they're all tied. So now we have to break that tie. And so I was thinking, okay, what objective metrics can we use to value winners? And I think this should go kind of without being said, but I don't know if any of us, and maybe Phil, and maybe like you disagree, but I think when you're submitting your winner rankings, they are your rankings and you value certain things. And we have Phil's top 50, Blake's top 50, Will's top 50, and that's our order. And I'm not necessarily ranking these winners on, okay, these are who I think are objectively, like, this is correct. I'm not trying to say this is correct. I try to put forth what's a way where I can kind of take all the data that I appreciate about a Survivor winner and about how they won their given season and put that into a metric. So I took actual stats, a bunch of them. How many jury votes you got? What percentage of the jury votes you got? That is the end goal. Did you get a lot of jury votes? I had a win equity at final six. How many of the people could you beat, and how likely were you? So, like, if someone at four was 100% going to beat you, okay, you almost lost. You're one of me challenge away from losing. So I weighted that for all 50 winners. I took into account challenge wins. I took into account how many post-merge tribal councils were you vulnerable. So that kind of can counteract challenge wins a little bit, but it can also help you if you won some challenges, but you also were vulnerable a lot. You didn't play a lot of idols, or like if you had eligibility to be voted out, I valued that. I wanted to value correct voting, but there was no way to do it with split votes. And I couldn't go through each one and be like, well, that one was, I couldn't do that for all 50 seasons. I mean, I could if I really had the time to sit down, and maybe that's something I missed. Like, how correct were you? How many tribal councils did you survive? There was a lot of data that I went through, and I wanted objective numbers to spit out a ranking. And then I also wanted to have some of my personal bias. So then I did pairwise for the other 50 winners, and I went on how much control did you have of your own season. So the control weight was very huge, because I think that is something that I value in a survivor winner. How much did you dictate your season, and how much are you the reason that you won the season? I think there are some winners who they don't win because they actually did anything all that active. They kind of either stumbled into it, or they were background, or they were brought to the end. And yes, they achieved the goal, but that's not as impressive to me. So I think that's basically the spiel, is I did take some metrics into account, and I had an algorithm, and then I weighted certain things. And then I had my own kind of subjective weight of what I appreciate, ranked the winners based on how much control I think they had. So yeah, does that give you a good rundown, Phil? Was that intelligent enough for you? Or
I thought that was a pretty good description, and I can say that because Blake was shaking his head, which means he's probably frustrated by your description. So you definitely did a good job. Honestly, I think you summed up what you did well. I think what people are going to see with some of these rankings is your algorithm. You know, it was about the data going in more than the data coming out. But we'll see. We'll see if people agree. What were you? Go ahead. What were you going to say? Well, go ahead. Defend.
No, I mean, I think the goal is, because if you want to argue that one winner is better than another winner, you're basically saying, I appreciate the way this person won more. Mm-hmm. You can't really say they did a better job at winning the season or winning the show, because they both objectively won. So they both did the thing. What's more impressive to you? There's never going to be a correct answer in this. And I think that's why it's difficult. I think when you're looking at maybe sports stats as a comparison here, who's the MVP? I think there is a more correct answer in that, because they're all competing in the same season against the same players, you know, with the same refs, the same environment. They're playing the same game with the same rules. All the players were ranking there are different locations. Well, not always. Different twists, different cast members, like different opponents, different production interference, like different weather, you know, different everything. So it's way harder to be like, this is the correct thing. What I'm trying to get is, this is what I value. This is what Will likes in his winners. This is not by no means saying I'm correct or there even a correct ranking exists.
Yeah. I mean, this is why it's been so long since we've done this ranking, because it's just so arbitrary. And I always like to try to take into account, and I say this a lot on the podcast, can other people like win the game that you want? And I always say, like, Bob and Gabler, we have people saying, Bob, is he going to be last? He's going to be 49. You guys are going to find out very shortly. But people are talking about Bob and Gabler. And the thing for me is, while I understand that a lot of people don't appreciate those wins, no other person who's over the age of 50 who's played Survivor has ever won Survivor. Bob and Gabler can't play the game that Parvati played, can't play the game that Natalie Anderson played, can't play the game that Rachel Lamont played. Like, they can't play that game. And I think that gets lost on some people, because it's like, okay, it might not be as impressive, but think about all of the over 50-year-olds who have played Survivor and who have lost Survivor, trying to be more aggressive, trying to do different things. You have to play to who you are when you play Survivor. And Will, I know you and I have talked a lot about this on the podcast. When you get the final tribal council, you can't be viewed as a character, because if you're viewed as a character, you get zero votes. We saw it happen to Ben. We saw it happen to Carolyn. Like, especially Carolyn, we all felt that she played a pretty good game, and yet she couldn't get any votes. And Franny Marin saying, when I get older, I want to be you, except I'm still not going to vote for you to get $1 million. And so it's like, you can't be viewed as a character. So how do you overcome being viewed as a character if you are naturally coming out and you are a character? And I think that's something we see with somebody like Tony, maybe even somebody like Gabler. And we'll, Fabio is another example of that. And we'll go through these people as we go. But I just think that this is so hard to do. And some of my rankings, like Blake said, right off the top, stuff is going to contradict other stuff. But I tried to just be like, realistically, could I see this person winning another season? Were they in control? Were they doing anything? And I do not fault people, and I say this all the time, I don't fault people if they have to win a bunch of immunity challenges to win at the end. Like, Mike Holloway put himself in position to get really far in the game. He wins a bunch of immunities. That's okay. If you're the guy who hits the three-pointer at the buzzer to win the game, yeah, you needed to hit that three-pointer at the buzzer to win the game, but you were in a position to hit the three-pointer at the buzzer to win the game. And that's how I feel about some of these people who won a lot of challenges. So, I don't know. I feel like,
but
again,
five three-pointers at the buzzer,
surprises here. But what was that?
Five three-pointers at the buzzer might be a little bit different.
And
well, five three-pointers
in every other, like, if that happened, it would be the greatest game of all time. Like, we don't appreciate five buzzer beaters, but that would be like, I was there at the Villanova game or whatever. You'd be like, holy crap. I think that's interesting you went the math way, because I think whenever I was doing mine, I think it is more, I have this thing in my other hobbies where it's like math versus like the math of Survivor versus the music of Survivor, or the math of this versus the music of it. And math is easy to be like, seven is higher than six, but like music is kind of like, is rock better than polka? And it's like, well, a lot of people think rock is better than polka, but there's some polka artists that would just dominate the modern rock scene. They're just above rock. So I think that's some interesting thing of like putting all these together, is I went more music in mind, where I wasn't like thinking about breaking down what their voting records were at all. Mm-hmm. That is not coming into play in mind.
So we have Vlad the Impaler. Do future or past seasons influence your rankings? They did not for me. If you were playing though on your second, third, or fourth time when you won, depending on who your competition was, that does impact it. Like Boston Rob, I think statistically probably plays the most dominant game in Survivor history. He is not ranked anywhere near my top 10 because the game, the competition that he's up against, the way the game was structured, he's on his fourth try. Yeah, that impacts how I am viewing Survivor, like, and how I am ranking my winners. But I don't care. Like, JT comes out, he dominates Token Chains. You say what you will about Heroes Villains, you say what you will about Game Changers, I am focusing on that Token Chains game. That was his first time playing. And I definitely do have some bias towards first time players, because that is the purest version of Survivor. That is the purest version that you're ever going to get of that type of player. If you can win it on your first try, that to me is more impressive than winning it on your second or third, because that is where everybody is on as even of a playing field as you can be. Although, as Will said, you know, not every cast is the same. If you're on the Nicaragua cast compared to the China cast, there's going to be a lot of differences in your competition there.
So. Way harder to win Nicaragua. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. 100%.
Yeah, and actually, I did have a bonus points for people, for winners on their first try. I think there was, I forgot what the exact number was. It was a weight where you did get a nice little bump if it was your first try. Even if it was your second try, you got half that bump. And then if it's your third or fourth try, you get no additional points. So that was, that was something I used. And I did also try to add in competition, going through the cast and rate, like, how tough are the competition. But it literally ended up being like One World and Redemption Island bad, a couple of the like All Winners good, and then Heroes or Zones good, and then a couple. It's pretty, there's not that much variance. It's hard to say, you know, the China cast and the Australia cast, which was a harder cast. I don't know. I can't really say.
I mean,
Nicaragua or China. I really don't know. I think Nicaragua probably cast does probably have its tricky parts that you have to navigate, even though, you know, there might be bigger characters. China's just a better season, so we might look back on it like that was tougher because we like the characters, but that doesn't necessarily mean winning that season was more difficult. Mm-hmm. So,
and then that's your analogy with an MVP. It's like you're hitting all your own homers against the Orioles. We're hitting all our homers against the Padres. Like, that is the part of this where we could go straight by math, but that math is still not the same.
The math ain't mathing.
Exactly. All right, we got this from Worth Playing For Super Chat. I wonder if there'll be a correlation between the winner rankings and the era of the show. Go ahead, Blake, say it. Scream it.
Yes. I think this is where maybe I should wait till the first one shows up. I'll wait. But this does matter to me, and I think this will be the hill I will die on, because it made it very easy for me to, instead of interspersing and like, oh, what about this? What about this? I do think there is a premium based on how many days you're on the island, because when I watch old seasons for some of my podcasting duties and it says day 30 and there's still 10 people left in the show, I'm like, good God. Like, this is such a different thing.
Yeah, I agree. I hear you on that. And we'll see that in these rankings as we're coming up. So this is the 10. Hyrody Garcia says Tony will be included. Both games, like Cagayan and Winners at War, separate winner. Yes, we are talking about all 50 wins. We are talking about all 50 wins. Sandra and Tony do not get a bump for being two-time winners. Like, they are, we're talking all 50 wins individually. That's what this is. So yes, Cagayan, Tony, Sandra, Pearl Islands, Sandra, Heroes, Villains, Winners at War, Tony are all going to pop up. So here we go. I got a little PowerPoint here, you know, this way everybody can look at that and not have to look at us. I know. It's a good thing, right?
I can eat chips.
You want me to do this here? There you go. You're not going to hear that the entire night. That was an applause. Okay. So here we go. We're going to have this going here, right here. So there's your Survivor winner rankings. And here's number 50. Shock, right? We got Chris Underwood, Edge of Extinction. I put in the final tribals, votes against, all that stuff. I thought that'd be fun to include. Highest ranking was Johnny McKenna at 41. All three of us ranked him at 50. So none of us by this one. Look, this was easy for me. This was the easiest one. And I know there's been a lot of argument in the chat about, like, you know, Chris did what he was supposed to do on Edge of Extinction. He did exactly what he needed to accomplish. My thing is, though, no other winner was voted out on the season that they lost or they won. So I have to put Chris at 50. Like, that's the easiest criteria for me. I don't care how perfect his finale is. If you're voted out, no other winner was, I'm putting you at 50.
If Rick Devins had won, would you have put him at 50?
Probably, yes.
Okay.
But even Rick Devins at least had time to play in the post-merge. Chris literally sat on the island the whole time.
I do think that's the number I care about, is how many days was he a viable member of a tribe being able to be voted out the night he went to bed.
Yeah, in my metrics, you know, I used the number of tribals survived as one of my metrics, and his number, he survived 5 tribal councils. So, like, that was just going to completely dock him right there. And then you look at, you know, even,
and he had idols at 2.
0 tribal immunity wins. Only one individual immunity win. And then, yeah, I had like post-merge tribals survive that, or that you're vulnerable. He only had 2 of those. So, yeah.
Dumb thought process for you. I think, not that all 50 winners will ever see this or care about this, but I think he's probably okay with being 50 on every list, because the money spent, he's fine. And he doesn't have to prove anything. It's almost like, I did the easiest version of winning Survivor. Why would I care about my legacy? And like, I should be ranked 43rd is such a, like, who cares for this person in particular, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, he had the nightmare Survivor run and then won. He already got that's his win.
He did,
right? He doesn't need anybody.
Honestly, it's like more, it's more fun to be like, I'm the worst Survivor winner than to be like, I'm the 48th worst Survivor winner.
Yeah.
Like, it's more fun to have the superlative, even if it is negative.
Yeah. If you're not first, you're last, and he's last first.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very good. All right. So Chris is not surprising at all. So that was quick. I will say, though, the difference between 50 and 49 was 1 point. Okay, when we added all this up, it was 1 point. The bottom two are so close to each other, and then there is a massive gap till we get to 48. So when I tell you that these two were the most despised by all of us, wait until you see the highest ranking for this next person. At number 49, we have Bob Crowley. Okay, from Survivor Gabon. Highest ranking was me putting him at 45. Johnny McKenna had him at 50. Will, where did you have him?
I feel like I had him above 45. That's why I'm surprised.
Had him at 47.
Okay, well, the computer spit out 44th place for Bob Crowley, my objective rankings. And I guess my adding my subjectivity in landed him at 47, which is surprising that because I feel like my subjectivity should have helped him, but I guess not.
Yeah, your subjectivity actually hurt Bob Crowley. I like the shocked face, though, of like 49 when you had him ranked at 47. Like, you couldn't believe it. We have a question like here.
I just think there are more obvious people because Bob, at least a couple pluses for Bob, and maybe I should have had him higher, but it depends who I have him below. One of the best fake idols in the history of the game. Like, that's a very active strategic move that I think, you know, should be at least not valued for the move in and of itself, but it does put Bob on a kind of playing field that he is thinking about the game in a way where he is playing to fool people, or not just, you know, people say, oh, he's old, he's camp life, telling stories, he's social. It's like, that's a game move. And so he is game oriented. And I think Bob incorrectly gets called out about never playing the game. And he just ends up there. The final three is whack. Yes. But outside of Maddie, like, he beat Susie. He beat Sugar. Probably doesn't beat Maddie, but he probably beats Crystal. He maybe even beats Kenny. So like, his final six equity is even probably higher than we give it credit for, that he got deep in the game. That jury did like him. I mean, you're going to have your Corinnes, your Marcus, your Andrews from that, not Fang.
Charlie. That's what you meant, not Andrew.
Oh, sorry. You're going to have those jury votes there. Really, I think he might beat anyone except for Maddie in the final six, and that should be maybe applauded.
I mean, my thing with Bob, and the reason why I ranked him at 45 and did put five winners confidently behind him, I know people always throw him at the bottom and say he almost lost to Susie. He didn't have a good pitch at the end. He kind of just like went backwards into a win. Yeah, but he's also the oldest winner in the history of the show. And that's the strategy that worked to be the oldest winner in the history of the show. Like, I think that if you come out and you play a really aggressive game as an older man, you generally get voted out around the merge. Like, you generally get voted out, or you're viewed as so weak and such a non-entity that you get zero votes at the end and nobody cares about you. And they think that you're just a leech. He went to the end with the right people, and people can knock him for having Maddie still in the game at Final Four because he would have lost that. But like, Bob wasn't in control in this game. And I know that that's another knock, right? He wasn't in control. But also, his entire tribe, he did align himself with the better players. They just got wiped out by that crazy second swap or third swap, whatever the hell it was. And it wiped them out and it put them on the wrong side. And Bob did the thing that you're supposed to do in Survivor. Do what it takes to survive one more day and be the last one remaining from your alliance if your alliance is getting wiped out. And I think another thing that he had, the moment where he goes back at Kenny when Kenny, you know, pretty much is like, Bob, you said you'd give me the necklace. You said you'd give it to me. And he's like, yeah, but then you said you were going to vote me out. And Kenny gets so mad about that. It's like, no, Kenny, you literally said that. Like, everybody knows that that happened. Also, the plan when he's talking to Corinne about when he found the idol and how he did it, and she buys the story. Like, he was thinking about the game and he was actively in the game. I mean, look, I had him at 45, but I do think that he just gets tossed in as 50 way too often. And like, I'm fine with him being in the final five. I'm fine with him being 49. I don't really care. I understand he's one of the worst winners in the game. But again, this is where I think it's so arbitrary. Bob Crowley can't play the game that JT played, but he won the game and he won one of the most insane seasons the show's ever had.
Honestly, I think the most damning thing is that he let Susie get three votes. Not only like subjectively with how you view him, like, wow, you couldn't, like, how'd you let that happen? But also, even if you're looking at metrics, he really didn't. He barely beat Susie, which is just kind of damning on both sides. So, yeah,
agreed.
I think one thing that I have not heard in a while that just came up into my mind, it feels like sometimes your wins are because your alliance wants to win out. And it was like, we have four of your alliance members on the jury. There's three CODA people on the jury. It literally is just not anybody but Susie, but it's anybody Fong is going to win. And it is something where it's just, was that Bob's intention? Was that Bob's design? Absolutely not. No way in hell. But he is the last Fong standing with all those people that are like, yeah, Randy's never going to vote for these people. And it is just it's like a default, like, all our favorite restaurants were closed and it was Sunday, so we couldn't go to Chick-fil-A, so let's go to Popeyes. And it's like, it's not your favorite chicken restaurant. It's
bro, just Popeyes is much better than Chick-fil-A.
I agree with
and
that.
That's why we have rankings.
There you go. The other thing with Bob is I think a lot of people knock him because he needed the immunity wins at the end, but he wins three immunities and then makes fire to beat Maddie. He's going up against Maddie and Kenny in like almost all of these challenges. So he's going
an Olympic athlete.
An Olympic athlete. Yeah, who's washed up. A great physical competitor and a great puzzle competitor. Bob is the one who's winning. And he's the oldest guy out there. And like, this is where I get more defensive about winning immunities. Like, he put himself in position to still be there. He was still there. There's something to be said for being the oldest guy out there, withering away, weighing like 27 pounds by the end of the season, and still being able to get the wins against good competitors to sit there at the end. And ultimately, he made the relationship with the person who was most important to make a relationship with, and that was Sugar, because Sugar feels bad and sees her father in him and says, hey, I got to bring him to the end. And she gives him a shot at fire, which there was no way in hell Maddie was ever beating him. So, yeah, Bob here at 49, a lot of defense of Bob. But, you know, again, highest ranking was 45. Blake, where did you have him at? Do you know?
I did pull this up. I had him at 48.
48. So we all had him 45 to 50. And somebody had asked earlier, did John and McKenna rank together? Yes, they ranked together. So that is like the Survivor Rewind ranking here. So John and McKenna are together. Are we ready to move on to number 48?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so there is the rest of these that we're going to talk about, the rest of these eight tonight are very close in the ranking. There is a 20-point gap between Bob and number 48. So, like, we are talking another tier at this point.
That's surprising. That really is surprising that Bob is, like, Bob and Chris Underwood are just together on the bottom when it should just be Chris Underwood together on the bottom.
Yeah.
Together well, with the,
What you're going to see, and that's why I included the highest and lowest ranking here, pretty much every winner that we are going to talk about tonight has one person who goes to bat for them, and that's what helped them bump up. And uh-oh. I'm curious to hear some of the arguments here as we roll through. So here is number 48, and my favorite part about this being number 48 is the first person who has to defend themselves is, who is it, Blake? It's you!
No way!
Number 48, we have Jenna Maraska from Survivor Amazon, beats Matthew 6-1.
Delete this whole podcast. Why would she be 48? Highest
ranking is Blake.
How do you have her at 29? Like,
John McKenna at 49, Blake at 29. Blake, I am so curious what the hell you're about to say to us.
Well, she's in my top 30. I think part of it is, I think whenever I was ranking stuff, it was like anybody in the first 10 seasons doesn't have to deal with an idol. So factor that in. How did she get win? Oh, wait, she's had the most jury votes of everybody through the first eight. It's her and Sandra are the 6-1s. That's pretty good. She went to the end with somebody she could beat, but she had to get there with immunity wins. It's like she kind of steals Rob Sesternino's win. Well, that's kind of a good strategy. If you can't do, oh, I can't play the smart strategic game because I'm a beauty model. It's like, cool, just take him over, chop his head off at the end. That's probably a viable strategy even till now. Of like, who cares if you were driving the bus? I'll spend the money. I think Jenna is somebody that people were excited to come see play again to see how her game evolved. Yes, we know that Jenna didn't get to really have that opportunity and she's not going to come back a third time. And I think that is something that I kind of do. What's the right word? I mourn that not being able to see the third version of Jenna Maraska, where she's like cutthroat and on Survivor again. I think she was extremely cutthroat. I think she got to be in cool scenarios because of who she was, of the hot girl that everyone wanted to be around and wanted to trust and underestimated. I think the stuff where she's like giving the idol over, the necklace over to Heidi, is cool. That's all stuff that I'm like, if I was a winner, I could never do that. I could never play the way Jenner Maraska does. I guess that's a good thing because you guys don't think it was that impressive. But Jenner Maraska winning Amazon is probably not, there's not five people better on that season than her. And then in my mind, whenever we're talking about Amazon, it's like, if we like the season, if we think it was like the birthplace of the modern like strategy thing, she's the one that comes out on top of that. And it's like, I think that does have, that's, she's not doing it by accident. There was a, there's not a clear plan from Final 10, but there is a plan of like, all right, here's what I need to do. I need to outmaneuver Rob Cesternino, the god, the Rob father of this shit. Okay, all what's right, your
raise my
questions?
Hand on that. You're acting
I,
like
that. I have to be a shooter. Plan. I have to be a shooter.
Her plan was to outmaneuver Rob. Yeah, okay. What it, is this?
There was no outmaneuvering. It was out physicaling challenge wise. That was it.
Yeah, she won immunity challenges from four. What she won it at 4 and 3, right? She won the last two, or she won the last
I think three? She won the last three. I want to say
should not win at 5.
Oh, she didn't win at 5 because they decide to vote out Heidi over Jenna because Jenna's essentially trying to quit. Look, Jenna doesn't want to be there, and that's what has her ranked low for me. I rank Bob one spot higher than Jenna because if you're going to talk about falling into a win completely backwards, I think that Bob had a little bit more gamesmanship than Jenna had. Like, I think that Jenna was one of those players who she got in with the right people. And Blake, you say there's not five people ahead of her. Rob, Heidi, like Dina, like you go
all two.
I had for the win equity metric, it was the number of people you could beat times two. So if you could beat everyone else at final six, you got 10 points. I had Jenna at 2 points.
I will
you
say
only beat Matt out of the final six. But the computers loved her, Blake. The computers had her at 31. So that's why in my overall ranking that because she did very well in she got a lot of challenge points. Like Rival you said, wins, she got the percentage of jury votes, she did very well. So metrically, I think she performed well. But if you watch the game, which is why I added in my personal bias of weight, and that's weighted half. I had Jenna almost, I think, at probably at 49, and that brought her all the way down to where I don't know where did I end up having her, Phil. I don't even know where she landed.
You had her at 46. You and I both had her at 46.
Okay.
The thing that I want to say, where I'm like, I'm not saying we should let the general population dictate our votes or whatever, but when people say the worst five winners, this is the first time in my life I'm hearing Jenna Maraska's a bottom five winner where everybody's like, oh yeah, of course. Like,
oh really?
Who cares about her? Like, I have never heard this in my entire
life. Oh, I feel like Jenna's always been talked about as like, yeah, in the conversation of a bottom tier winner, just because like it never feels like she is driving the ship or steering the ship. She's not steering the season. It's Rob Cesternino's season. He's doing all the dirty work. He's making everything happen. We have a comment here about like threat level management. I don't think Jenna is not, I don't think she's pretending to quit to lower her threat level. No, I think she just really doesn't want to be there. I don't know if anyone's backward there's way their way more into a win than Jenna has.
And I mean, we were all in diapers back then too. So.
Intention matters big time.
Right. Me.
And like, I don't need you to have control, but I need to know that your intention is to do what you are doing. Jenna's intention just didn't feel like it was there for me. Like, she was just going along for the ride. She latched on to Heidi and she latched on to Alex, and that was her entire game plan. And then she had Rob and what it's like. I don't know. Like, good for Jenna. I mean, Blake, like you said, she goes and spends the money, but I just do not think. I was shocked, Blake, when I saw you had Jenna at 29. I literally my jaw dropped, and you're a robot. That's what Will is saying. You're a robot. You are Will's algorithm. He figured out how to get
Blake might be. I mean, I wanted to wait jury votes because that is the end goal. Like that get jury votes is the goal of Survivor. And she did get 6 out of 7. 6-7. Hello. But it is like against the only person she could beat at final six.
Yeah. All right. That's Jenna Maraska. So that's our oldest school winner we're talking about tonight, Blake. I can't believe you're still so dumbfounded. I'm like, I'm surprised you're so surprised. Like, I'm dumbfounded you're so
there's some bad winners coming up that I would choose Jenna over them. where it's going to be a no-brainer for me. It's crazy to me that it's the opposite for you guys.
You guys chose Jenna over a lot of people.
That's what I'm saying. 21 of them.
Yeah, I mean, you weren't even in consideration here. Okay, where are we going next? One thing I love about summer is how easy everything feels. The days are a little more relaxed, and I find myself reaching for the same comfortable go-anywhere pieces again and again. That's why I keep coming back to Quince. They focus on well-made essentials that naturally become those everyday staples you actually live in all season long.
Quince's 100% European linen pants and shirts are breathable, easy to throw on, and a summer upgrade your rotation needs, starting at just $34. And Phil, I told you this before, but I don't often wear linen shirts or linen pants. But now that I have them from Quince, I find myself going back to them time and time again, whether it's an upscale outdoor event or if I'm just hanging by the beach or at the pool, I'm reaching for these shirts all throughout the summer. Also, their tees are soft enough to live in all day, and the lightweight cotton sweaters are exactly what you want when summer nights cool down. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're paying for exceptional quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a trusted favorite for everything from home to travel to everyday essentials.
Make your summer wardrobe easier. Go to quince.com/specialist for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/specialist with an S at the end for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/specialists. Your paycheck date could soon become the most irrelevant number in your life. Earnin is a non-bank finance app, 5 million people and growing. The concept is almost annoyingly simple. You earn money, you access it. Up to $150 per day of what you've already worked for, up to $1,000 between paychecks. Tips are optional and standard transfers take 1 to 2 business days with no mandatory fees. Expedited transfers start at $3.99 and cap at $5.99. It's not about emergencies. It's just a better way to exist financially day to day. Worth checking out. Look, you all know I wear a lot of hats, and nothing annoys me more than waiting for money that I earned while due dates inch closer and closer. I did the work, so what's taking so long? We live in an era of instant gratification, so why don't we demand instant access to our money? The most essential thing we need to participate in society is the thing we wait for the most. That's absurd. End the absurdity today. Download Earnin on the App Store or Google Play, spelled like earning money without the G. Type in the specialist under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Access limits are based on your earnings and risk factors. Standard cash outs take 1 to 2 business days with no mandatory fees. Expedited transfers available for a fee. Tips are voluntary and don't affect the service. Available in select states. Terms and restrictions apply. Visit earnin.com for full details. We are going to number 47. You guys got any guesses? Anybody want to guess that's 47?
It's got to be Ben.
Got to be Ben. It's Mike Gabler, our first new era representative. Blake, don't worry. You're the reason he's here. You ranked him at 46. Highest ranking was Johnny McKenna at 30. He is one vote away. James Jones is the only reason Mike Gabler doesn't play a perfect game in season 43. I guess none of us took that into consideration because all three of us are, Blake ranked him the lowest, but all three of us are pretty low on Gabler's game. Gabler at 47, lowest ranked of the new era winners. Surprising anybody?
Not surprising. I think in terms of new era, we might not favor those wins as highly, but even with that, the new era for the most part has provided pretty good winners. I think when we look back on most seasons, we're like, that person, I see how they won, or that person would do well in an old school season. That person's just got the chops for being a good survivor player. I think Gabler stands out as an outlier in the new era as somebody who didn't really control their season, wasn't like the driving force. And you know, he has a very fine strategy of being the Allie Gabler, popping up and then hiding. But I don't know if hiding and waiting till the end and hoping Jesse loses fire, or Jesse loses final immunity, is a good way to ensure that you win the game. He did win the game, but I don't think he, I don't want to fault him for winning. Good job. But there are holes in his game where I don't think he's not beating Jesse. He's not beating Cody. He's not beating Carla. He sat next to the only two people he could beat, and there were a bunch of avenues for that scenario not to play out. It's almost like
I'd argue he'd beat Carla. I think there's a way there that he beats Carla. If he beat Cassidy, I think he could have beaten Carla. Truly.
I feel like Carla was way more of a like respected gamer than Cassidy ever was, though. Like, she was looked at as kind of like the head honcho of that alliance for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Like, where Cassidy was trying to claim things that she didn't actually, that weren't actually true. And that's why she wasn't able to get jury votes, because she was saying, I was in charge, when she really wasn't. Whereas if Carla's in that position, I think they're saying, okay, at least Carla, you were the head of a post-merge alliance that got to the end. So I think good for him for winning, but it took a very specific set of circumstances for the three best players at Final Six to go out 6-5-4. And that's not a very repeatable win. I don't have any hate towards Gabler, but I don't think this was, I think he required too much on outside forces where he just ended up there and didn't do what he needed to. Like, he never turned on Jesse or Cody. Like, sure, they both went home, but Jesse turned on Cody first, and then Jesse ended up losing in fire. It's not like Gabler is like, I need to spill blood early because I can't beat these guys. They just kind of happened to go out on their own.
Can I say this, though?
You can say whatever you want, Phil. Go for it.
Gabler beats every single person in fire by about 10 minutes, which was kind of his ace in the hole, because I think he always was going to ensure that he was sitting in fire next to Jesse. Now, granted, Jesse could win Final Four immunity, and then that's over. But I think Gabler had actually positioned himself pretty well, where right, no matter like, what, if he's in fire, he's easily winning. Nobody had a chance.
What if Cassidy wins and takes Gabler to Final Tribal Council, and he's not?
I think Gabler would say, "Do you think you can beat Jesse?" And she would say, "No, I don't." And he would say, "Okay, put me in fire against Jesse." And I don't think she does take him.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, he's getting to fire more times than not. That's valid. I don't know if I want to rank a winner higher because they're good at fire, though. I mean, it's a good thought. And I know that is the format of the game, at least since season 35. But, I mean, honestly, look, when people are in the chat saying, oh, how is this person bottom five? How is that person bottom five? How is this person bottom 10? When you do a ranking, there are, like, those spots need to be filled. So they need to be filled by somebody.
And the gap... The gap right now, and you guys aren't going to, know this, but the gap between where Gabler is and 33rd is only 30 points. The gap between Chris Underwood and Gabler is 27 points. So like 50 to 47 is 27 points. 47 to 33 is 30 points. So it's really close in this 47 to 33 range. And then there's kind of another gap. So Gabler was 1 point off, or I think if I'm looking at the rankings right now, Gabler was 3 points away from being 43rd. That's how close this is at this juncture. So I think that's a fun way. That's why it was fun to include John and McKenna doing a combined list, because now they're arguing with each other over making a list, and then we have our list. Blake, you put him at 46, one vote away from a perfect game, and he's 46 for you. Why 46?
All right, here we go. So this is a new era person. They only played 26 days. So 26 days is immediately dropping you so far below, just because the only people that played less days is Chris Underwood. And then there's a couple other people I put low for other reasons of they probably should have gotten voted out, but there was a twist. So I think that's my thing of he's the new era. Is hurting him of 26 days. I think there's some stuff too. This is a joke, but it's like, I don't think his season was that had some of the best players. And I do think it is something where it's like, all right. And like, Jesse's probably one of the worst masterminds ever. I think if Jesse goes on another season, he gets 18th or 17th place. Like, good luck. He's going to sester Nino on his next All-Star season.
Well, yeah, that's not his fault though.
But like, it's something where he steals Jesse's win because Jesse doesn't know how getting to the end works. And it's not impressive from anything Gabler does. I do like that we all latched onto the Alec Gabler because it was probably the easiest thing for the editors to tell everybody and have everyone believe, because it kind of makes sense. And I do think getting your biggest shooter out, biggest op out in the first vote of the merge is very impressive. That was cool. And if we had seen three more moves like that, I think it would be like, how do you not like Gabler? But unfortunately, it's like, I don't really want to think about 43 that much. And because I'm not a big fan of the what goes on. It's not my favorite season. And I'm not going to go like, Gabler killed it. He's just like the last person standing. I also probably was going in there thinking Cassidy was going to win. And I probably am a James Jones. I would vote for Cassidy to win this season.
Yeah, I hear kind of what you're saying there. I do think that this cast had really good players, though. Like, I do think that Jesse is great. I think Cody is great. I think Carla is great. I think that James Jones is great. And I honestly think
Owen has a
Cassidy and Owen are pretty good players. They just got kind of caught in the no man's land. And that happens. Like, Jake O'Kane is a very good player who's a zero vote finalist. That happens sometimes on a season where things just don't go your way. And I think that's what happened here. I think Cassidy and Owen, it just didn't go their way. But I say all the time, if Owen came back and played again, I absolutely could see Owen's not Joe Hunter, where it's like, oh, here we go again. Same thing. So I ended up having Gabler at the second highest spot. I put him at 43. I like Gabler's game, and I agree here with Rizgod. Gabler low-key too low. I do agree that, like, this is probably a little too low for him. I thought there were a couple other people that would probably end up below Gabler. But at the same time, when you make one or two moves and your game is really hidden from the viewer, I understand this, because I'm going to also have a person that's going to be unpopular with a lot of people that's going to make this bottom 10 because of where I rank them. So it happens, and that's how it goes. And I think Gabler, like, played the game again, same thing to Bob, played the game he had to come out and play. He can't play another game and win Survivor. And yeah, some things broke well for him that he didn't actually intend to break well for him, but he got the win, and he's one vote away from JT Earl. JT and Earl status. Who else is who's the other perfect winner? There's another perfect winner.
Oh, I was going to say Adam, but he's not.
It is Earl. It's not Earl because
of unanimous winners are different than perfect. I mean, you have to be.
Yeah, well, the perfect winner was.
I'm never going to do it.
The perfect winner is you get no votes against and you get all of your votes. And it's not Earl because Earl gets.
Cochran?
It was. There you go. It was Cochran, JT, and that's it. There you go. So Gabler was one vote away from being there.
Yeah, but I think context matters there. I mean, the computers had him at 38, so they liked him a little bit more.
Wow. Well, you a huge computers guy? Like, Miami got into the college football playoff this year because they finally, like, had to do a ranking system.
There is some college football, you know, when we were in the BCS and you had the human polls and then the computer polls and they were weighted. That's kind of what
I miss.
That is the method I kind of took here. Yeah.
All right, we're going to number 46. Y'all ready?
No.
Ben Driebergen, Heroes, Healers, Hustlers, beats Christy and Ryan, 10 votes against, 9 were negated by idols. I love that stat. Blake had him at the lowest at number 49. Will, you had him at the highest at number 32. Will, I'm going to go to you first on this, since Blake, you know, has kind of been cruised. Blake has been crushing it on these superlatives here. He's the highest or the lowest. So I'll go to you first, Will. Why'd you end up putting Ben at 32?
I think people don't like Ben for the twist and the twist only, and that's fair. But outside, like, if you just want to say, look, if that twist doesn't happen, he loses and he shouldn't be included as a winner, and that's why I'm going to rank him low, I can't really argue with you so much. But he is a winner. He did win the show, and I want to look at his game holistically. And Ben does some awesome things on this season that are completely overlooked. One is being a double agent, which I don't know if we've seen repeated. I think D might be the only other player. And what I mean double agent is that you successfully flip on your alliance at a tribal council for a vote. And then, because usually when you vote, it's like, oh my gosh, somebody flipped. Who flipped? The votes are read. It comes back out. You're like, oh, do you want to talk now? Do you want to talk to them? No, I'm hot. Don't talk to me. Don't talk to me. Like, to vote out somebody and flip on your alliance with going undetected and then staying with them, so you're getting all the intel, that's very impressive to do. And it's the first time we had seen that in 35 seasons. So I appreciate Ben for that. I also think Ben is winning against the final, final eight? final. Yeah, like, how far,
Devin.
How far Devin do you have to go back in that post merge to say, oh, that person's beating Ben? I don't know how far. It might be the whole entire. Like, Ben, I know, is an idol heavy guy, but people liked Ben and they were rooting
Rimmer for him. Rimmer takes him down, brother.
Now, he took Rimmer down. He took her down, man. 6-1 vote negation right there.
Yeah, Ben bombs. I probably value idols more than I do challenge wins. So, you know, I think a challenge you play, you're either good at it, you're not, you can give it your all. I like endurance ones where it really is willpower. How badly do you want this? But at the end of the day, you can either do the challenge or you can't. I think idol searching is more a matter of pure will. It's almost an endurance challenge that's going on all the time. Are you going to wake up early? Are you going to look all night? Are you going to spend the time to search? And that might not be not how you want to, you know, classify, or you don't like the physical part of the game. But to me, like, that's kind of survivor. Like, you got to figure out a way to survive. And so I just don't knock Ben as hard. And I get why people do. I get why people do, because of the twist, because that there is now forest fire making. It was not implemented in there to save Ben. It was always going to be in season 35. It was part of the new format. They wanted to make it a twist. So I get why he's this low, but I got him higher. Sorry.
Yeah, I ended up ranking him at 39. Like, I was surprised that he's – I'm not surprised that he's in this first episode, but I'm surprised he's a bottom five winner according to our rankings now.
The internet really does not – have
no, they don't. And my thing is, he's playing the game that he has to play. And somebody says it here, Daryl Seymour says, people wanted Ben out because he was the biggest threat to win at Final Tribal Council. Like, I understand you need to manage your threat level, because if you stick your head up too high, that's when you do get voted out. And Ben didn't manage his threat level very well. But at the same time, if you're able to then go find idols and win immunities and win fire, like, if things break your way, it happens. Now, granted, I had him at 39, barely outside of the bottom 10 in my eyes, because it was a lot of luck. I mean, he's very lucky that his first season, that the first season of the Final Four Forced Fire Making Challenge, he's a beneficiary of that. With the idols, other people should have been looking. That's how I feel. Like, other people should have been looking when he was looking.
He did that part better. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. He did it better. So I don't know. And Ben's like a good guy. And I know on Winners at War, it didn't come out that he really had a lot of winning potential, but I think the game kind of got too much for him on that season. I do think that Ben has a repeatable win, because I do think that Ben is the type of person who's always around at Final Seven. But Blake, you had him as the second worst winner of all time, only ahead of Chris Underwood. So what was your take on him?
Wow, when you say it like that, I feel like a real villain. I think the word we said earlier about other people, whenever we're like, nope, they didn't. That was not their intention. There is no way Ben gets through Final Four without the thing happening. And I know we preface it like, if you feel that way, that's your prerogative. And I do feel that way. It does feel like, hey, this is somebody else's win. It literally is yours because of the number of your season, not because, yes, you put yourself in there and it's like, oh, if I had flipped my thing the other way, I would have won immunity myself. Well, we could do that for 1,000 permutations of all these other seasons, but the permutation that happened for you was we open up this envelope to see what happens. Actually, there's a twist at Final Four. Chrissy, not only did you just win immunity, you get to save one other person, and the other two face off in fire. And I think, as much as we're like, oh, we hope that goes away for 50 in the hands of the fans, and then it doesn't, and Rizzo loses again. But like, Ben got the biggest boon from that. And in my opinion, that does drop him to Underwood. And then Ben, of like, right, you should be a fourth placer. But you get to spend the money, but it's not something you did specifically. Like, just like we love Jesse's game from 40, whatever, of like, Ben should be a fourth placer, and he should be in the fourth placer rankings, not in the winner rankings. And who cares what happened at Final Tribal to like have people vote for him? He should be at fourth place, and it's only because of this twist where he's not.
Yeah, I mean, that is fair. I mean, if they don't do the forced fire making twist, he goes out 3-1 at 4 for sure.
Mm-hmm. The computer has Ben at 30, and the computer doesn't know about forced fire making. So it's just that it's like, that's where he would be without the big drop. So,
yeah. For what this is worth, Rizgod, after 50, I rank Ben a lot higher than I did watching. That has something to do with Chrissy, but I guess everybody can read between the lines. I don't know. I don't want to make assumptions about that, but there you go. Rizgod ranks him higher. All right.
I can read between the lines. Rizzo hates Chrissy.
I'm not quite sure I understand the lines that I'm trying to read between.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know if that means
Rizzo will have to come on and explain to us at some point.
Does he think Chrissy's game was better or worse?
I don't know. That twists are a part of the game. Excuse me.
Twists are part of the game. He went home at 4.
And it's so how you adjust, you know?
He could have been Ben.
Maybe.
I have no idea. We're moving on. 45. Will? There he is. Your handsome man.
I just don't get it.
Fabio Berza. Coming in here, highest ranking was Will at 27. Lowest ranking, John McKenna and Blake all had him at 47. Will, I mean, it's no surprise you have him ranked the highest.
But honestly, I think I try to temper my bias a bit in my subjective rankings, but the computer rankings had him like absurdly high. I think.
That's how you knew your algorithm was bad was when Fabio.
How you know it's working. Correctly, the algorithm had him at 19.
That's insane.
Because he gets a lot of challenge wins. I also his final six win equity is pretty damn high because he beats probably the only person in the final six that you think could have a chance, and that's Chase. Like, he was always going to beat Sash. Like, he was going to beat Jane. He's going to beat Holly.
I don't know if he beats Holly. He beats Dan, but I don't know if he beats Holly.
He's beating Dan Lembo. No, I know.
It's
and I didn't
big algorithm, Blake.
No, I didn't even give him the full point for Holly. I gave him half because it was a toss up on Holly. So we got 9 out of the potential 10. He went one challenge at the right time. I think also he very clearly states early on in the season when he's being called a dumb blonde. Oh, I didn't know a guy could be a dumb blonde. And he basically just owns it and says, yeah, I'm going to play dumb. They're going to underestimate me. I'm smarter than you think. Survivor is inherently a social game. You got to get people to like you. Everyone liked Fabio. Like, even the one person who got into altercations with Fabio is Nayanka. Nayanka ends up voting for Fabio over Chase.
That was insane watching.
Like even Nayanka, who like despised this guy just for like no reason. Like, Nayanka would steal his socks and he'd be like, yo, are those my socks? And she'd be like, why are you coming at me right now? And it's like, yo, you're the one who stole my socks. I'm just chilling. Like, Fabio, I think, and I did not rank the winners on how often can this player win a season? Because I don't think that's the ranking we're doing. I think that's more of a player ranking. We are ranking the individual wins. That being said, I think Fabio is doing well on a variety of seasons. I think he's always going to make the merge. You're not voting about pre-merge. He's smarter than he looks. He has some sense of game. And I appreciate that he was able to, you know, He didn't win. It's not like he won 5 in a row like Mike Holloway or idled every single time. Like, yes, he did win 3 in a row, but he is vulnerable late in the game there. It's between him and Benry, I believe, final 7. And it's one of them going home, and Benry is doing everything he can to scramble, plea, make deals. And Fabio goes, you know what? The smarter thing for me to do right now is play dumb, chill, pretend I don't really care that much, and then they're going to keep me instead of Benry. That's exactly what happens. Fabio wins the next 3, and he's likable enough to get the jury votes. That's a pretty damn good game.
I mean, that's why I ranked. I had him at 42, so still low. But that is why I ranked him higher than a lot of other winners, is because his game was intentional. Like, you can't tell me Bob's game or Jenna's game was more intentional than Fabio's game. Fabio knew coming in how he was going to be perceived. And it's about taking, you know, knowing yourself enough to know how you're going to be perceived and lean into that so that you can get to the situation of being able to win the game. Blake, you had him at 47. Is it despite Will, or was there more to that?
I think part of it is, like, I've been in the Survivor community a long time. This has been it's Bob Crowley and Judd Fabio Berza that are not the good winners. And you start to believe it. You start to think about it. There's also a layer that came into my brain of, like, it's a 5-4 win, which is like, oh, Chase got 4 votes. Then in other seasons, we've gotten rid of the quitters from the jury. Then he loses 4-3 if there's not Nyanka and Kelly voting for him. It is crazy that Nyanka voted for him, and that is the winning vote. When Chase and her had a way better relationship, that's insane to me. That is something where, is that a vote for Judd Fabio Birza, or is it a vote against Chase Rice? So that is an interesting thing. I do think he had a little bit more game in his mind of like, because I think I remember there being a scene where he like wakes up one day, like at final seven, and goes, I think I could actually maybe win this. And you're like, okay, when you're saying that, if you're saying that at final 18, it's like, I don't know if we're going to use this. But at final seven, it's like, okay, did he believe this the whole time? Or is it like now he knows and feels like he has the gumption to take it all the way?
That could have been a fed line by a producer, though. That's probably the story they would be like, all right, we weren't really expecting this, but some, can you tell us this now?
Yeah.
I think Fabio knew a little bit, at least, of what he was doing.
Yeah, I agree with you, Will. I think that Fabio knew more than not. But I think the double quit, as people are talking about in the chat, the double quit definitely, it
helps.
There's
no way
him.
He makes it to the final three without a double quit. So that is an actual more important layer. Thank you for reminding me of, like, if we go to every single elimination, he's not getting voted out over Purple Kelly. He's not getting voted out over Nyanka. Where do those people fit in the final three chairs? I don't think it has Fabio in it.
It's two more tribal councils he has to survive, and I just don't think he can do it.
But even with the algorithm still had him at 19, even and it docks for tribal council appearances if you're not attending that many tribals.
Which is crazy, considering the entire reason for playing in the post-merge or the pre-merge is to avoid going to tribal council. I love that people are being docked for winning.
No, but then you're given points for challenge wins pre-merge, though, too.
Sure. All right. Moving on to 44. We got Natalie White. So, Survivor Samoa. Will, you had her ranked the highest at 33. I had her at 49. She had 8 total votes, but all 8 came at the same tribal, 3 on revote. You guys can make whatever face you want. I keep talking about intention mattering.
You count revotes and votes against?
No, that's
don't.
Why I put the three on the revote there, because I think that that's important to note. So it is 8, but it's
How Natalie White is this high. I don't know how I got her. This is definitely all the algorithms doing.
No, this is you and Blake. Blake ranked Natalie.
No, but I'm saying, how did I get her to 33 is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, that has to be.
Like, on my own, if I put in 33, that feels kind of insane.
There's a couple people you have her ranked ahead of that I will make sure to mention.
Well, the algorithm put her as the 20th best winner.
Yeah, that's why your algorithm, like I said, Will, you didn't reinvent the wheel with that algorithm. You just needed to adjust the algorithm. But anyway,
she was vulnerable at like every post-merge tribal council. Her final six win equity is very high. The jury votes are very, very good. I mean, her metrics are extremely high. I guess it makes sense why she's up here. And
she doesn't do anything. Like, that's where it's like, you could talk about this weird algorithm metric thing, and that's fine.
Well, that's how I chose to do it, okay?
That is.
I don't know. I'm not saying it's right, but I think it's interesting to look at. Like, there's so many things that you look at her game that, like, she did correctly. She wins 7-2-0, and she's vulnerable every single post-merge tribal.
Chambo still didn't vote for Russell because she loved
still
Natalie so
gets
much.
The dub. It's, like, somewhat impressive, and I think it's hard. We've always said the show very much fails to show a social game. And maybe we've also talked, it's maybe not a struggle or a failure, but it is intentional by the show that a social game is not as entertaining. So let's show more strategic plays, more physical plays, because that's more like, that's what the audience craves. That's a story we can tell easier. It's harder to be like, oh, this chick that doesn't really do anything, everyone just loves her because she's a pleasant person to be around, and she's going to go to the end with people that she knows she can beat. Like, that's not an easy, fun story to tell, even though that very well may be exactly what happened, and she was planning this the whole. Like, we don't know because we didn't hear. And I think Phil's default argument is, because I didn't hear from her means that she must have not done anything. And I'm not saying that isn't true. What I'm saying is, it could be we didn't hear from her because the show wanted to prop up Russell as a star who's competing on a next returning player season, and that we want to have, we want to make the argument, probably we want everyone watching this show to say Russell should have won. That's probably Jeff Probst in his mind. It's probably the mind of the producers of the episodes who deliver the episodes to Jeff Probst. Actually, at this point, they're not quite doing that. But as a production, they want to reward a more Russell-style game. They want to put it in everyone's heads that Russell should have won. And if that's your goal as a production, as a TV show, you are going to limit what you're showing of your winner, who doesn't actually do many things that are tangible gameplay, strategic decisions, or moves like that. But she easily could be, I mean, you praise Michelle's game all the time, Phil. Like this, I think we can say she's a very likable person and got the votes. So I'm not going to say she did all those things, but I could definitely see a world in which she knew what she was doing more than the show let us on, because the show had every incentive to not highlight and credit Natalie's win.
Yeah, I mean, I rank Natalie at 49, not just because of the fact that she was invisible. I mean, Worth Playing For says she does low-key control that merge vote. Yeah, so did Gabler. And like, I feel like that's always the argument with Natalie for why people want to rank her higher, is because she controlled one vote, because she convinced the Galoos, hey, we need to take out Eric, and it worked. And yes, that is her one move. Natalie is out of the game at 10. If Russell doesn't play an idol correctly, she's out of the game when John Fincher goes, or when Laura goes, if Russell doesn't convince John Fincher to flip. Like every move in this game, other than the merge vote, is done by Russell. And Natalie, good. She got on the back of the right guy to get to the finish line and then be able to beat, because he is so abrasive and so nasty to everybody. And that is the goal of Survivor. So again, we're doing a Survivor winner ranking. She did win the game, so I can't really fault her for this. But if you're going to ask me to rank them, she had no control over her game. It wasn't intentional the way she was playing. And if Russell doesn't have some of the most insane moves in the history of the show, Natalie doesn't even come close to finishing in the top three. And she's out very early, totally forgettable. We don't even talk about her anymore. And so that's where I think Natalie White really benefits from being there with Russell, being the one who is the one who doesn't push against him, which good for her. That is a great strategic move. But as far as I'm concerned, like, she has no control over her own actual placement on this season. And so, yeah, like, she gets to the end, she does what she has to do, she gets the win. But I have it as the second worst win in the history of the show.
Fair.
All right. And I had her at number 34 because I think she's way better than what we're saying at 49. I think she is something where it's like, what we're talking about is like the judo. It's not how hard can you throw a punch. That's not what we're doing. It's like, can you take these punches that people are throwing and deflect them the right way and still be around? And I feel like most other people would be like, what a skill. And I think one thing that kind of not blows up an argument, but like, Mick got zero votes.
Yeah.
So, oh, that's what you're saying. Russell and Mick is who should be. I was like, how did Shambo not vote for Russell? I got what you're saying. So Mick got zero votes. So there is another person that could have gotten all these votes of, I did all this stuff with Russell. Why do we think Mick is even worse? And I do think there's some people that are legit furniture in games on CBS, whether it's Survivor or Big Brother. But like, I think Natalie is the person who you go to a party, you're not sure who's going to be there. But when my friend gets really drunk after four beers, and I'm going to be his chaperone. And I feel like she chaperoned Russell around that early merge to get enough people that would be willing to work with him to do that blind side, who would be willing enough to not just put guns on him immediately after the first immunity idol. And like, I don't think that was Russell's doing. I know that he has his strong arm thing of, you're going to be next if you don't go with me. And I do think this is a little bit of like, you're playing against the worst team in baseball. Like, Galoo is the most implode, like the worst defense in baseball or whatever in this analogy. But I think Natalie is doing what she needs to do to get there more than other people have. And I think there is like, yes, what's his face? Who's the guy got, who was the jury foreman? I'm going to say his name in a second.
Eric,
he gives her, here's your argument. And I know that doesn't happen very often at Final Tribal, but she was like, yes. And I do think this is one that will be lost to history, because, well, let me just rewatch it for myself. I do think there is the layer of we need to make Russell look even better, and we need there to be a controversial win because Russell's coming back and Natalie is falling beyond the wayside. Why is that happening? Well, don't we want the best players? Nope. We actually want the most entertaining. And what Russell does is so much more entertaining.
Yeah.
But is that what we're doing? Are we doing the best character ranking when Russell got top three? Or are we doing the best winner ranking where Russell is not even allowed in the club?
Yeah, no, and I hear what you're saying with that. But yeah. Natalie still latched. It's not Russell's not just a character. Russell makes unbelievable strategic moves and unbelievable idle plays on this season. He's not just a character. So like that's where it's like Natalie's not making those moves. She doesn't even know they're going on most of the time. And she doesn't even know she wins. And this is something that Worth Playing For says, is Natalie's game viewed more impressive if she flips on Russell at like final five and then still wins?
I guess we'll never know.
We'll never know, but maybe because she doesn't know she beats Russell when she gets the end. So it wasn't her intention. Like Sandra knows she's beating Russell in Heroes versus Villains if she goes to the end against Russell. Her concern is Parvati. Natalie doesn't know she wins going into that.
Natalie plays a better Parvati game of handling Russell than Parvati did.
But I don't even think she meant to. I don't know.
That's how good she is. She did it by accident.
Yeah. I don't know. 44. Like I had her at 49. You guys want to put her, we get her to 44. That's fine. If she had made it into episode two of this, I would have been rigging.
I mean, that would be surprising. I think it's really hard to rank a winner.
I think she would have been
see anything. Like you kind of have to rank this type of winner low. I'm not saying it's her fault, but it's hard. Like if we don't see it, how what do you like? What are we supposed to do with that?
And yeah. She's getting 19 or 20th if you do this after Heroes versus Villains.
Yeah, exactly.
So good for her for figuring out how to beat five more people.
Yeah, seriously. Good for her for Chris Underwood existing and the new era existing. Speaking of the new era, we are going to number 43 now.
Oh, wow. That's Aubrey. Oh,
no way.
I thought it was going to be Aubrey.
No way.
So at 43, we have Kenzie.
We're getting canceled.
Highest ranking was Johnna McKenna at 34. So nobody really went to bat here for Kenzie. Lowest was only 44, Blake. You and I both had her at 44. So, like, nobody felt strongly positively about Kenzie. She survived everybody's final or bottom five. So she's in here. It's a pure social game, right? She beats Charlie. I know a lot of times it's like, well, is it more impressive that she was able to beat Charlie? It kind of falls in the same thing of like, is it impressive that Natalie is able to beat Russell? Is that good? But here we are with Kenzie at number 43. And again, this is how close this is. Kenzie is only 15 points away from being 33. So like this is very, very tight between all of these. So when you're sitting here shocked, it is literally 6 points that prevents her from not being on next episode. That's how close this is. So Will, if you want to jump in, I can see it in your eyes.
Yeah, I think with Kenzie, and this could also be, I think she kind of maybe falls into a Ben Driebergen-esque win where it's like, okay, if this one thing didn't happen that probably shouldn't have happened, then you are going to lose. Like Maria should have voted for Charlie. Like Maria was better friends with Charlie. He was Uncle Charlie to her kids. They were allies all season. Maria was gunning for Charlie. Charlie took out Maria first. Like they should shake hands. Charlie, you got me. You win. Like I get you could be like, well, it's the jury's decision. The jury's always right. That's the end of the game. I hear you, and you can be correct. And I think you could argue the Ben thing is even stronger. That look, if there's no twist by production, which is even more outside of a control than a jury vote, then like Ben should never have won, and Ben should be low. And I hear that argument all day. All that makes sense. But I think they're in similar camps where it's like those winners are some of the closest winners to not being winners. And that's why they fall low. And it's not that they were bad players or that they did anything wrong or that they can't win another season of Survivor or that people don't generally like them and that they wouldn't generally be allowed to like be able to collect jury votes. It's that in this specific instance, like she probably should have lost. And I think that's probably why she's in our first episode here. And not that nothing against her. She deserved the win. She's probably could win on any like a lot of different seasons, but I think that's probably the reason why she's so low.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really well discussed. Blake, why'd you put her at 44?
I do think this is the controversial win of the new era of it's not that I'm going like Charlie was the freaking best, man, but I did think Charlie was going to win. I don't think I've really gotten the explanation that made sense to have Maria flip. It's new era, so it's 26 days. I do think she was somebody who's like, I'm really fun and agreeable. And there's some really annoying people in the merge on this season. And that's why I love this season to watch. But who are you going to work with? You're going to work with Tevin, or are you going to work with Kinsey? Are you going to work with Soda, or are you going to work with Kinsey? Are you going to work with Venus, or are you going to work with Kinsey? Are you going to work with Q or Kinsey? Are you going to work with Liz or Kinsey? Are you going to work with Tiffany or Kinsey? And it's like, it is something where none of that is like gender bias. None of that is racial bias. None of that is sexuality bias. It is solely, wow, this person is even keel. And even keel wins. Maybe it's something I'm jealous of because I don't think I'd be very even keel on a beach. But it is some flippancy that goes into being an even keel person that's there to just... I got blindsided. Tiffany goes home, but Kinsey should be next. Why is she not going home at 7th right after Tiffany? Well, there's some idol stuff going on. We got to get rid of Venus first. Well, now there's some idol stuff going on. We got to get rid of Q first. And now Kinsey is the most even keel person to work with to knock out Maria, because Maria will still vote for me. Well, sorry, Charlie, that doesn't work. Liz goes home. Sorry, Charlie, get it. But it is something where I think that's a power that Natalie's even keel and like she's nice and that's why people voted for her. I think that's the way Kinsey made it through that merge, where it isn't as exciting and interesting to me as other people. And then there is a layer of outside meta of this, of like, not a big fan of how she's like not dealt with the thing, but like you could lean into it, you could joke about it, but she's in the like, all my haters fuck off, I have the million. And it's like, all right, I'll bump you down a couple things.
I don't think we're supposed to be ranking their like off the court post win sentiments.
I love the pettiness from Blake on that, though.
Oh, it's her last name, brother.
Yeah, exactly. I end up putting her here because I do feel like with Kenzie, it was a very like, this is the very specific season that Kenzie wins. I think that, like, Blake, you went through all the castaways. I think 46 is such a great cast because it is such a unique cast to the new era, where there are actually a lot of villains on the season. There are a lot of chaotic personalities. There's a lot of aggressive personalities. And I think that that's a good thing for the season. But, you know, while 46 was airing, we were all saying it's kind of like the new era Gabon. And look at where Bob ends up getting ranked. And I think sometimes when the season is as chaotic as this is, the winner gets lost in the shuffle because there's other players you want to see. And yeah, Kenzie does end up getting the win, and she does end up getting the Maria vote, which, like, that's the name of the game. Sucks to be Charlie in this situation. But like Will, you were saying, it feels like it's that one thing that puts her over the top. I don't know if she beats Liz. I really don't. Like, I know that some people think it's a no-brainer, but I really don't know. And I don't know if she beats Maria. Like, I do think that Kenzie, you know, she can make the argument at Final Tribal Council, but what is it that the jury is looking for? Tiffany's always going to be on Kenzie's side. We know Tiffany is the most bitter juror in the history of Survivor. She's done it twice now, but like, still, is it going to be enough to get Kenzie the win in every situation? And I don't know. So yeah, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say, like, Kenzie, I have her as the second worst new era winner. And it's not really that she doesn't play a solid game. It's just there's so much happening around her that she doesn't really feel a part of. Her social game is great, but everything else, I'm like, okay, what is it about Kenzie that really earned her this win? It feels like it just got really freaking personal with Maria towards Charlie.
Also, I'm not saying this lightly. Whenever you're doing Sporkle and stuff, there's a couple people in this ranking where I'm like, fuck, who won blank season? And that has come into mind where I was like, what is her name again? Like, oh, I can picture her. And that's not good for like the legacy and like whatever.
It's not good for the Specialist brand.
No, that's but that's awesome. I didn't say it on live, so we're fine.
I mean, well, Blake, if you can't rattle off the winners in order in there's, like under there, a minute,
I can't. Let's time me at the end of this. That'll be the sixth episode. It's me doing Sporkle.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. So there's Kenzie. So that's our second New Era winner on here. Gabler is the only one that we have below her. What's funny about this list is it worked out where 9 of the 10 that I had in my bottom 10 end up in this bottom 10. But like for everybody else, it was a little more chaotic, especially Blake. Blake, most of your bottom 10 is like, I mean, I guess you're no, I guess Blake, you had a lot too. It's really more Will. But 9 of my bottom 10 were in here. So I'm
the algorithm, baby.
Yeah, the algorithm. Will's just throwing darts and seeing what sticks. But by the time we get to the top 10, when Blake's is just seasons 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because look, man, they played early seasons. That means they're better. Moving on to number 42, Amber Mariano. I guess it should be Berkic here. Look at that ranking for highest ranking. Just real quick. Just look at that. Blake has Amber ranked 24. Will, you have Amber ranked 49. I'm just like... Like, Blake, you ranked Amber at 24 and she still finished 42nd. That's how low everybody else ranked her. So you're like crying. You're already laughing so hard. Will, why don't you start this one? Because Blake needs to sit with his tears for a little while.
I love her. I love Amber too. I got to say, like, I think Amber is like one of the most, like,
you put her 49.
She's such an enigma. It's like, we do Survivor All-Stars. We're going to bring the best players back from the first 7 seasons. And Amber does nothing all season and just wins because everybody hates Rob and is bitter. It's poetic. It's funny. It's hilarious. It's one of the reasons I find our All-Stars to be completely enjoyable because it is so like not what you would expect with a season like this with Amber winning. It's my favorite Final Tribal Council of all time. But, like, I don't know how – if you have Amber and Natalie White, like, you know, more than 10 spots different in your ranking, and the algorithm probably does, but if you
they're
have
– exactly 10 away in line.
Winners that far apart, then I don't understand it because I think they're very much in the same camp where they latched on to a dominant strategic player who – played a little bit too hard, a little bit too aggressively. And I think in the case of Boston Rob versus Russell, where the state of the game was, Boston Rob actually didn't do anything that bad. He like went back on Lex's, like a word with Lex. That's kind of Survivor. Russell went a little bit worse where he was, you know, more of a bully. He was stealing things. He was calling people names. He wasn't pleasant to be around. And so I think it's more like I think Russell has a better case of beating Natalie than Amber did of beating Rob, but Amber's the one who came out on top just because of a bitter jury, which makes me value that win actually less than Natalie's because Natalie at least has the plausible deniability of, yeah, Russell's an asshole. I'm more likable. I'm better friends with the jury. I can sit next to him and win. I don't know if Amber fully has that possible deniability because Rob isn't really an asshole here. He's just making strategic moves, just wasn't praised at the time. And I don't know if there was a clear read. There also isn't a final three, so it's just the both of them. And they're kind of a unit. And Rob did everything of the unit. Like, he made all the decisions. So in terms of someone just – like, at least Jenna Maraska got to the end by winning two – what's that?
Where'd you rank Natalie?
I forget. Probably 10.
33.
Yeah. There's the difference right there. Plausible deniability part, at least. Jenna Maraska at least won the final two immunities to get herself into the final two and was sitting next to somebody she could confidently beat. I'm just not really. I think like we're going to talk about a game that was played by somebody else. Amber is the like flag bearer for that type of win. So.
I mean, I had her at 48, so Will, I was happy I could type your name there, but I had her one spot higher, so like, whatever. I just, there's nothing there. And with the thing with All-Stars, and this is something that's going to pop up a lot as I continue through my rankings, Amber was coming in with zero target. Zero, zero, zero target. That season, the winners were picked off immediately. Colby was treated like a winner. Kathy was treated like a winner. Lex was treated like a winner. Like, if you were a winner, you were gone. That's just how the season went. If you were a bigger star, you were gone. That's why a lot of people wanted Rudy out. That's why they wanted Jerry out. That is, people didn't realize how big of a star Rupert was before this all happened. Amber came in probably the 18th biggest threat on the season, and she wins the season. That really impacted my ranking. So I had her only above Chris and Natalie White.
Hello. Welcome to
top half. Let's go with that.
Welcome to the pro Amber section of the podcast. Your host, Blake Meyer. I think usually duos, you got to maneuver. You got to put yourself above yourself. She worked as a duo. She's one of the strongest duos in the history of the show. Yes, you can say Rob did all of it, but Rob did it all. Rob had... Who's he going to betray? He's not going to betray Lex, is he? He's not going to betray Kathy. There's no way he betrays Big Tom. There's no way he betrays Amber. She literally has the superseding on all of those. I think that's my argument I used whenever we did the Every Season Matters of this season. Yes, she had a lower threat level, but I think there's something cool about, like, I'm a duo and it doesn't matter if I win or lose because it's going to be my husband. Is so much sicker than like half the people on the show. I think there is some cool stuff about this. I think one thing that we're not going to get for 40 of these people, actually it's less than that, maybe 20 of these people, we got to hear her talk about Survivor on Survivor again after. And seeing her on Winners at War and having her moments on Winners of More really made me appreciate her more rewatching it. And it is kind of cool. I know you're probably not supposed to use that. I'm using some stuff.
You're not.
All right. Well, sometimes there's some heart and there's some music involved. And I think Amber's win is something I could never do personally. I'm not going to fall in love with Boston Rob and go to the end and have four kids with Boston Robs. But I think that's something where whenever there is All-Stars, there's different rules. When there's All-Stars, there's different times to shoot people. And I think Amber is more aware of that than we're given credit for. And I think it is something where it's like, Rob is cool and it's cool to hate Rob. Let's give Rob all the blood on his hands because who cares? Because the check, literally both checks are going in the same bank account. I think there's some of that when I said for Natalie. And I think that
there was no bank account on that island though. He proposes at the reunion. Like you gotta know, you gotta play for the win, and she does not.
You're saying Biggie if Rob and wins,
we're doing the same thing, Blake. How'd that work out?
If Rob wins, they don't get married and he takes the million and goes
And he goes and finds some
I don't believe Boston that for a second.
I'm not saying that happens, but she can't know. And they continue their relationship off island to get to the point of a proposal. Like, that wasn't decided on. Like, they could have gotten home, moved in together, and be like, nope, this doesn't work.
Like, also, I think winning an All-Star season, whenever you're, like...
way easier when you have no threat level, yeah. Yeah,
when,
go on.
When you're on. Like, all right, is Amber 27th? Or, oh, her season All-Star winner, let me bump her up a little bit.
Yeah. That's
I don't know if that's happening in the robot thing.
The robot had Amber at 49. I had her at 47.
Yeah. I had her at 48, and I feel like a robot here.
Honestly.
Even John McKenna went 36 on this, so they're not even high.
I sat next to her at the finale that I went to, and she was lovely.
Well, so I'm sure she's lovely. I'm no one thinks she's not lovely.
Just like in All-Star seasons, in winter rankings, anything is fair game, and here we go.
I feel like Blake missed the assignment on Amber. All right, last one for the night. Number 41, last person we're talking about.
Somebody has to be positive when it's time for, like, female winners, too.
Yo, 24, though, is crazy.
We don't have 9 female winners in the bottom 10, and then only...
We have 5 female winners. Right now, we have more
male
winners.
All the outliers are my dumbass.
You're getting way too meta with worrying about what, like, the online community is going to think.
Gabler, Bob, Chris Underwood, and Fabio.
and
those are the bad ones.
And Ben, we literally have five of the bottom six are men. If the internet complains about us, the internet sucks.
If
I don't care.
I wasn't a shooter for some of these women, it probably would have been more of them.
Blake, you're the hero for all things women. All right, let's move on to number 41. All right, so here we go. The last one, I've already hinted that it's a woman. It's a new era woman, and this is my fault, and I could give two shits that it happened to everybody. Erica Kasupinen, I actually don't know how to say her last name.
Wow.
Kasupinen, 41. She beats Deshaun and Xander 7-1. Will, you had her ranked 30. I had her ranked 47. Look, man, I will sit here and we talk about it. Here's your one thing. That entire game was able to change when she was able to hit that hourglass. It is the dumbest thing. It is so stupid. I hate it. She does play a solid social game and strategic game in the second half, but like so much of it is set up and designed around the momentum she's able to get from like the dumbest twist in the history of time. And so for me, maybe when I rewatch 41, maybe I'll appreciate it more, but I do not like this season at all. And I do not think that her game is very good, and I'm putting her at 47, and maybe this is too low, but I am more than happy to sit on it and say, yes, I still have her ranked as the worst new era winner. I think 41 is like barely even survivor. Anyway, her edit is not there. Like, you know, we have players who have bad edits like Vesepia and stuff, but I see where their game is. Like Erica's game, I really don't see for the majority of it. She ends up winning. I know that the internet is very, very high on her, but I have her at 47, which lands her here at 41, which I do ultimately think is a fair ranking for her.
Yeah, I go back to the Natalie White well with this, where if we don't see it, it's hard to praise it or say it's good. It's going to more often like hurt your winner ranking if you're a quiet winner. She's one of the most under-edited winners I can remember. I mean, people say, oh, she came on late post-merge. Not really. Maybe at like final six. Like that's in final, the finale starts at final five. So what? She had two episodes out of the 13 where she was active. We've heard from Exit Press that the show went out of its way to make her look like the boot or the first target on that blue tribe. They never went to tribal pre-merge. We didn't get to hear from her, and they were trying to build her up as an underdog. Breaking the hourglass was her whole story. Wolf in sheep's clothing, all that. Like, that's how her story was crafted around this really dumb twist. But the thing is, we just don't know. I don't have all the information here, and I guess no news is bad news in this case if you're Erica or Natalie, because Phil is just going to trash your whole game. But not that I can really disagree. It's like, what are you supposed to do with that? Like, if we don't see your game, what are we supposed to do? I think that's why it's kind of a conundrum. The algorithm clearly really liked her. I've got her at 30. But I mean, look, she did get, she, because you have to look at it. I think there is something. I know it's a little bit of a bit here, but it's worth looking at why some of these players are higher from the algorithm than we would expect. And you look at Deshaun and Xander. Deshaun might be the strategic narrator of the entire season. I think you could probably say that's true. Xander had an idol all, you know, Xander pulled a Rizzo before it was cool and never played his idol. And he used knowledge as power against Liana, I want to say. Yeah. Like, that was, he had a big move for the jury. He got no votes. Like, she got to the end against people that were actively playing the game that seemed somewhat likable, at least. And she beats them 7-1-0. Like, she clearly was doing something right that we weren't seeing. And that's why I think we need to, again, we can't do anything else other than what we saw, but like 7-1-0 against two pretty good competitors tells you something.
Blake, you had her all the way down there at number 45. Sorry. I feel like Will just argued with his own algorithm for like 5 minutes. So Blake, you had her at 45. No. So not much higher than me. No, Will, I'm giving you a hard time there, because like pretty much it sounds like you were starting off by being like, there wasn't really much there, but she did do this, which is like,
what I'm saying is it's really hard to rank a winner. Like, rank any winners is hard, but it's especially hard when the show doesn't show you their game. And that maybe that's when you can lean on the algorithm a little bit more. Cause look, the proof is in the pudding. Like, The proof is that she won 7-1-0 against two people who we saw way more of their games of, that the show was spoon feeding us their thoughts, their strategies, their opinions. Whereas Erica is silent the whole time, but it doesn't matter whose opinions we hear, who gets more confessionals. At the end of the day, the jury thought Erica played a better game, obviously. And it was very clear. So there was something, was a disconnect in the storytelling and the edit. And that's not Erica's fault. So that's where, why the algorithm makes up for that. That's all I was saying.
Yeah, no, and that does totally make sense. So Blake, why'd you have her at 45?
Oh, I thought I was going to get through without having to do it. It is something where I am a casualty of just, are you going to do more research, Blake? Are you going to watch 41 again with a more discernible eye? No.
Yes.
I'm not going to do that.
When we get to it, every season matter, you are.
Yeah, I'm going to skip that one. Months. I'm going to make sure I have knee surgery that month. It's something where Deshaun is your second placer. He's the most likely one to beat you. But then you can just be like, oh, the Monty Hall problem, he did it wrong. He should be gone if he had paid any attention. He inadvertently got here. And then it's like, well, you inadvertently did the hourglass. The hourglass is the worst twist of Survivor. She's a direct person that got benefit from it. It is something where that's frustrating. And it is, she is the person I forget on my Sporkle, like 1 through 50. And it's like, oh, my God, what is her name? Oh, I need to spell it. She's probably Filipino descent, so it's a K instead of a C, and it's something where it's like, okay, she did really cool on another season of Canada's Traitors or whatever, but like, do I want to see her come play an all-star? Like, I don't really feel anything about her game or remember her personality, and it is something where, oh, she had a, like a dynamite tight ally with Heather, and you're like, is that her name? No, what is her name?
It's Heather. Heather?
Yeah, a dynamite ally. Like, why didn't they show that more? It's like they made it to the final four together. Like, did they forget how to edit during pandemic? Could they not get the right editors because they were on a different show for COVID? Like, what happened on that season? I think she's a huge... It sucks that we don't know how to go to bat for her because there's just nothing there. And that is frustrating for me during this, like, why 46? And it's like, I literally cannot bump her any higher. Like, I don't know anything. And
King Ninja here says 41 is a season of the post game interviews and Ponderosa videos.
I'm just never going to see how good her game is.
And look, we did interviews with Xander, Danny, Evie. We had these interviews. The problem for me is I'm really truly not taking that stuff into account. Like, I'm taking into account what I'm watching on TV. Because when you come back and now you've had 8 months, 9 months to think about it, your opinions are going to change. Your feelings are going to change. You're not in it anymore. You've eaten. You've thought about it. You've had all this different stuff happen. So I'm like, I'm taking that into account. I get it. You can also go watch a best of Erica. There's a video that I actually watched earlier today, like, not even kidding. And you sit there and you watch it. You go, wow, like, Erica did have some content. But then you realize the video is 20 minutes long. About 3 minutes of it is about the hourglass. And this is a 13 episode season. Like, your winner has that little screen time. And this is talking about immunity challenges, everything. Like, it's not just confessionals. Like, Erica really is so small there. And you can follow the story when you watch this chopped up, really cleanly edited thing. When you're actually watching season 41, the fact that her game starts being played because of the hourglass, or at least that's when we see it start being played. That's why I rank her really low. Like, I don't know what to do with her. So I put her at 47. And again, maybe when I rewatch it, maybe I'll think a little bit higher of her. But right now, that's where I have her. And she ends up at 41.
And one thought process for me, 41, it matches her number.
Yeah, 41 for 41.
That's amazing. Wow. Like, it's like, Phil, what's your movie that a lot of other people like that you don't like from the last 10 years? Just pick one.
Just pick a movie that I don't like. Avatar.
So what 2. If I said Avatar 2's bonus materials will make you have a full understanding, and all you got to do is
people
go
do
watch
that with Blade
hour.
Runner all the time. That's and the easy like, thing.
Blade Runner, first Blade Runner is so, like,
it's not my favorite movie, no matter how much behind the scenes.
I really didn't like it. Everyone loved it.
Okay,
that's my thing is with Blade Runner. Sorry, Blake. I know this is your point, but like Blade Runner, I've watched every version of that. And I've hated every single version. Like, I find every one to be boring. And that is where I, you know, when I look at Erica, it's like, okay, like, what version am I supposed to watch that's going to make me say, oh, yeah, this is great?
But I just it's like comparing a movie to this is like there's not really any point in it because the movie is supposed to be the movie's the end product that the director is agreeing. Okay, and maybe there are there's a director's cut or whatever. Bad. It's a group of people collaborating to make a piece of art, and there's agreed upon way it's gonna go, and they submit it, and that's it. What you see is what you get. Erica has no control or say in how her story is going to be told. She's a
really good actress in a bad movie. Then
I don't. I think it's just we are in a very. There's not really a scenario like this. Like even in sports, I can go. Everyone can watch the full game, and yeah, there's advanced analytics, and there's you know trade rumor. There's all these other things going on with sports, with media, everything. But you can go to the game and watch them play. You see all of it. Like, look, I don't hear what Steph Curry says in timeouts, but I see everything he does on the court. I can track every single stat. Survivor does not even come close to working that way. It's out of the hands of the players. It's not in the hands of the fans either, clearly. It is in the hands of a production company that wants to make a TV show. So there's not really any fair. I'm trying to think of any comparison where this could be the case, yeah, but Erica's goal
die then like
it's I'm trying. I'm just saying like a movie like Blade Runner is boring. It, that's the thing. Like Blade Runner is boring because it's boring. Like and because that's the movie that it is, and there's no amount of bonus features on the DVD that you'd be like, oh well, that's now what that, I'm it's like, that, well, that, why didn't that work? Make? Why didn't Matt make the main edit? It's like you were the ones Erica's that were releasing it to begin with. Erica has no say.
Yeah. Erica has the say of I can say stuff more interesting or do stuff more interestingly, but I want to win $1 million. And she's probably the 17th most interesting person in her cast. And it's like, too bad, so sad, editors. Good luck.
And on that note, that's our bottom 10 winners in Survivor. There it is. That's it. So what
is, I could push next slide and ruin the next one, right? Or how
yeah,
many
go ahead, do it. On here? It's just part two.
Let's go.
Monday, July 6th at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, we will be live with part two, 40 to 31. That's all that was. Yeah,
graphic design is my passion. Let's go.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really good, right? Look, man, I feel like that was a good little podcast we just did there. That's our first 10. So yeah, that'll be on Monday. If you want even more winning Survivor content, go check out the series I've been doing with Once Upon an Island. We've gone through the first 20 winners. We're discussing how they won the season, what it is about their game that ultimately stands out, and how winning the game has changed over the last 26 years since we saw it. So yeah,
good topic.
That's going to be on Thursdays. That's been on Thursdays. If you missed the first four episodes, like Worth Playing For did twice a week, bro, I'm itching for content. Thursdays, you got me there with Once Upon an Island. Otherwise, yes, this is probably going to be airing on Mondays moving forward. As you see, next week's is Mondays. We try to be doing this on Mondays moving forward as much as possible. So thank you all so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Give us a like, subscribe to the channel, become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist. I should probably put that up in the background again. Not that it really matters at this point, but there it is. Become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist, and let us know who your bottom 10 winners are. Let us know what you disagree with. I know you all are going to, and we'll see you on Monday.
Could we, for every Patreon that submits a list, Blake will personally compile all the Patreons that put a list of 1 through 50. Phil will send them to me, and we'll put on the Patreon, here's y'all's list of 1 through 50 who the best winners are.
Well, then all the patrons better start doing that. So there you go. I like that, Blake. If you want to have a Patreon list.
Do we add them to the rankings?
No.
Too late.
No, we do it. So like next week we talk about like Kenzie, Erica, Amber. I like where you're heading. We just it's like, oh, at number 38, it's Kenzie.
I like that idea. Every week it just keeps changing completely in flux. So we're never done. But yeah, this is a lot of fun. We're gonna go continue talking about Millennials versus Gen X. That's what we're up to for Every Season Matters. So thank you all so much for listening to this, and we'll see you on Monday.
See ya.
Good singing there, guys.